to put in all the work, everybody for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit and we go towards our goals together as one.
For Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box. That's one missed it.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and today we are talking about another win, a 3-2 victory away to DC United. And boy, did it feel good to get a victory against DC United in any fashion, just because they've been our bogey team. But a last-minute winner. Oh, man, that felt good. That felt so good. I mean, excuse my language, but fuck DC United. I am sick of playing that team. I am sick of them getting late goals, crazy wins over us. This win felt very cathartic, so I had to get that off my chest. And just a comeback, last-minute winner. We needed that against them. So we'll get into that in a second here. But first, let me introduce you to my co-host and friend, Adam. Adam, how you doing tonight?
Hello. We're doing good. We're doing good. Good to talk about a win, especially versus DC, because fuck them. And we survived a Benteke onslaught. So that's
somehow
my cats are very pleased with each other. We survived the Benteke onslaught, so that's even better.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how is another week of the kitten doing?
She's doing better. I have positioned strategically my laptop charger not next to my knee this time, so hopefully I will be getting clawed less during this recording.
We'll see. We will see. Okay, let's just start with your feeling heading into this match, away from home against a mid-table in the league team. I think we have a decent enough sample size heading in. It was 7 games for them, 6 games for us. And we you've obviously been very poor in MLS this season. And DC had been a bit better, but still not totally convincing. How are you feeling heading into the match? Were you confident? Were you worried? Were you like hoping for a draw? Like where were you, where was your mindset at?
I can't say confident, but I would say hopeful. The bye came at a fantastic time, and as we discussed at length on the last episode, we're looking at making some changes to the structure of how we play, where certain players are, certain movements, just general tactics and such, and they needed to change some things around. Looks like they did, and we'll discuss what those things were and how they worked and how we see them moving forward later. But I would say I was hopeful going into the match that this would be kind of a get right, you know, beat a bogey team, get a win against a side that talent wise on paper we should be beating. And like I said at the end of the last episode, with DC included in the as the start of the next 3 matches against you know, mid-table or lesser competition, then that it needs to be 9 points if this team is serious about competing and showing us who they are. Started off with 3, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. A reason I ask is, heading into the match, I was feeling pretty confident. Not sure what it was. I just felt like we were due a win. And yeah, kind of like what you said, coming off the break, having a good reset moment, I was feeling pretty good. Lineup comes out, and that didn't sway me one way or the other, but was interested to see Luis Muriel get the start at nine. I think you and I had talked about how Duncan Maguire has kind of been outplaying him this season, and maybe Duncan was the starting central striker and Luis Muriel was the starting second striker. But Muriel gets the nod up front. Were you surprised to see that? Because I was.
Yeah, there were a couple surprises in the starting lineup, in my opinion. The first was no Duncan, given that he had been probably the more goal-dangerous player, certainly the more goal-dangerous player this season, given that Muriel hasn't scored yet. We knew Faku was going to be at the 10 from Gramajo's reporting, but Ojeda also getting the start surprised me a little bit, but you know, I'm happy to see them try new things. I think my theory as to why they went with this way to start is they expected Torres to be more goal dangerous than he ended up being, and have Muriel dip behind him a little bit and have them exchange spots, which is, I think, the way you need to go if you're going to play that combination. Didn't really end up working that way, but I think that was the thought in Pareja's head when he sat Dunk on the bench.
Yeah, we'll get to Duncan later specifically, but it's going to be hard to leave him on the bench much longer if he keeps scoring at this rate between last season and this season. I think that was the major thing for me. Kyle Smith at left back, I mean, Santush kind of seemed to have that position on lockdown last season. Come the end of the season, he was the bona fide starter. I don't know if he's struggling with injury or do you know anything there? Because that was his position, and now it's just he's lost it, it feels like.
You want to know what it is? We need to play defense. That's what it is. So I think it's actually kind of Dagger Don's, not fault, but he's the reason for it, is all of the fullback play is going through Dagger Don at the moment. We're not doing anything with the left-sided fullback. And I think that's for good reason, because Dagger Don's evolving into one of the best. He's playing wing back, but one of the best outside backs in the league. And because he's basically playing wing back, he's getting in possession into a true right wing position. That's leaving a bunch of space. Brekalo is having to shift over to cover that right side. Arujo is also getting up in position, leaving Cartagena to cover the back line by himself. So we need someone on the left side who's going to stay back and purely defend. Kyle Smith is better at that than Rafa Santos. And that's just what it boils down to. Additionally, if we're not starting Duncan Maguire, then the service of Santos becomes less important, because that's not the kind of striker Muriel is. We're just going to bomb in a bunch of crosses at his head. So kind of, and if you notice, they did it this game. They subbed on Maguire and Santos at the same time, within a minute of each other. Maguire was 72, Santos was 73. Pairing those two together seems like a smart idea, because Maguire is very much a player that needs service. But it all has to do with the player's strengths. If you need defense, you're going to start Kyle Smith. If you need service, you're going to start Santos. They need a defense with this lineup, especially starting both Muriel and Ojeda, which is not a super defensively sound lineup, and Torres at the 10. I completely understand Kyle Smith's start.
You might be onto something there, because I'm looking at the past few heat maps of N'Golo, and against like Austin, you know, his average heat map majorly is in our own half. Against the Red Bulls, it's a little bit further up the pitch, but he also has a lot of touches in our own half as well. And then against DC, it looks like N'Golo's positioning is decently higher forward than it has been. So you might be onto something there, to where they said, okay, Kyle Smith, you're gonna sit deep and allow for N'Golo to have his starting position be a bit higher up the pitch. It'll be interesting to see if that continues. but I hope it does, because that's been one of my complaints, is that Angulo's been too deep. He's been playing too much left wing back, and we need him more as a left winger, getting us up into the final third. And he gets an assist in this game.
You could almost say that we're playing five at the back with, you know, Dogger and Angulo playing virtually the same depth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So that's the lineup. So yeah, I'm heading into the game feeling good. You're heading into the game feeling hopeful. We get into it, and a few minutes in, they get a corner. And for me, Galese goes running out way outside of the six-yard box for no reason. Clatters into a couple players, and they score. Benteke with the header, who would have thought, 1-0 within 5 minutes of the game.
Here we go again.
Yep, that was a real frustrating moment for me. I was not happy with Galese in that moment. I mean, what was he thinking?
Like, no clue.
There's a lot of airtime on that ball, but there's so many people over there. Like, you gotta just stay put.
I mean, he's thinking he can get there. Otherwise, why would he go out? Yeah. He could not get there.
He wasn't even close. I'm watching it again here. Oh, you know what? He doesn't even look over there. He's got his eye on the ball the whole time. I'm watching it one more time.
He gets taken out like way before it even gets to Benteke.
Yeah. So he glances a couple times pre-kick, and then he's just ball watching the whole time. And like, I get it, but like, that's like schoolboy stuff right there. Ugh, not good.
Yeah, that's a howler. Now, he did redeem himself the rest of the game.
He did. He had a good rest of the game.
He had a great rest of the match.
He ends up getting us the win.
That one mistake. Oh, that's been him this season. It's been, I mean, less of the spectacular, which he did have in this game. But uncharacteristic errors by someone who we previously thought was a world-class keeper.
Yeah, not sure what's going on with him. Hopefully he can get it right, because I don't see this team dropping him anytime soon. But, I mean, if we lost this game and he just had another poor performance, maybe he lets another one of those in that he saved. I mean, there will have needed to be some real conversations about his position in the squad. But we got the win, so that's kind of the sliding doors moment for him. But yeah, this is a terrible first goal to concede.
And it was super early, but I will say, I think that was his only big mistake in the game. The other goal, there's not much he could do about it. It was from well inside the box, volley, you know, that's going in. And he made some crucial saves to save us the game, both in the first half and in stoppage time. So we'll give Galese a pass on too much criticism for this game, but by God, that first one was bad.
Yep. Okay, on to our goal. Angulo gets up the field, puts in a cross over the goalkeeper's head. Dogger Don fires it home. Yeah, it was good to see us get on the score sheet from open play. It was good to see it come from what looked like a pretty planned move where we get the ball out to Angulo and he beats his man and get the goal.
I think that was also Faku's best play of the game, to get the ball. Quick decision, see Angulo streaking down the left side, get it to him in stride, set him up to get in a dangerous area, hit a ball. That was the good by Faku in doing that.
I don't have much to say on the goal other than that, but Faku at the 10.
I'll say on the goal, that might be the prettiest ball Angulo's ever hit.
Oh my gosh, yes.
It was a perfect cross. Like, with his Dogger left foot. Dogger couldn't have missed it if he tried.
Yeah. Just set it up perfectly.
I mean,
what did you make of Faku's performance?
He looked like a guy where it was his first game at the 10, and it's not his natural position, and he's not much of a guy who takes on defenders or a guy who plays other players open very much with through balls. And yeah, I didn't think it was all that great.
Yeah, me neither. He kind of looked like a pedestrian out there. He looked like just another player in the forward line. And like, it's okay. You know, like you just said, first game, all that. I'm not just trying to hate on Faku because he's frustrated me this season. It's just, that's it. He kind of just looked average, which is fine. We got the win without him, but
It almost looked to me like he was trying to do his best Mauricio Pereira impression, but that is just not his game. We know he and Mauricio are super, super close. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure they talked this week. There's no way they didn't, with him saying he wants to play the 10. I'm sure he gave Mauricio a call. It looked like he was trying to, you know, stay in front of the shell defenders, kind of orchestrate this, you know, pull the strings a little bit, trying to pass more than take guys on and shoot. He looked uncomfortable to me, and I'm not sure if it's going to work if this version of him continues. What I would like to see is, instead of him trying to pass so much, if he would try and get the ball to Muriel and then move to an open space very, very quick and try and get on the receiving end, get a shot off, be goal dangerous. He doesn't need to necessarily, like, yeah, we'd love some assists, and I'm sure he'll get some, you know, if he's using his gravity to pull defenders, but he needs to show he's a threat first. We need to do that with short area movement, getting him in an open space in a place where he doesn't need to beat a defender on the dribble, and then he needs to put a shot on net. That's how he's going to be successful through the middle. It is not going to be by trying to meet Mauricio Pereira.
Yeah, 100% agree. It's his first game, so I don't want to kill him, right? First game at the 10, you know, he goes in there from time to time from right wing. And we've moved him in there mid game at times, but like starting in a position and moving into that position mid game, two different things. And so absolutely we'll give him more time, but this one kind of passed him by a bit. Nothing wrong with that, so we'll see how it goes. In the second half, we concede. I mean, this one for me is just, again, all Benteke. DC United have a superpower and they're taking advantage of it, really. They've been doing it all season. They play the ball up to Benteke. He wins the ball in the air and either scores or causes enough chaos and havoc to throw the other team off and somebody else on the team scores. And that's exactly what happened. They throw the ball in the box. Benteke gets... beats three of our players to the ball. There are three players around him when he wins the header. No one really challenges Foley, and he knocks it down to Pirani, who just easily smashes it home, and it's 2-1 in the second half. And again, that felt like another gut punch. You know, we've been in poor form, and they just get the ball in the box, and it looks really, really simple. And we go down 2-1, and I was feeling pretty low at this point.
Yeah, as far as that goes, Benteke, here's the thing that I sometimes think about when a guy beats a triple team or whatever. And there are four guys going up for the ball. Someone's got to win the ball. He's like Calvin Johnson when Calvin Johnson in the NFL was the best wide receiver in the league, and he was triple teamed all the time. And he had constant high reels of just him going up and getting over three guys. Like, someone's got to get it. It might as well be the guy who's the best at it. And Benteke is the best at winning aerial duels in the league. By far, there is not a second place. There is not a third place. There is not a fourth place. There is not a fifth place. They're all Benteke. That's how good he is at that. And so, you know, that sometimes they're just, and neither Brekalo should be better in the air than he is defensively, I think. Janssen's never been especially great in the air, so neither of our central defenders. Brekalo also hasn't found form yet in a new league. So I think you can just chalk that one up to a great player doing what he does best. And then Pirani smashing it home from basically point blank range.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, Benteke is one of the best in the league. And just, I'm watching it one more time here. I mean, to be fair to Brekalo, it's Ojeda and Dagger Don who are closest to him. And then Brekalo is just kind of, he doesn't move his feet. He just kind of jumps off the ground, but he has no hope of winning it. He's so far away. I don't even know why he jumped. But still 3v1 and Benteke, who's the best in the league, wins the header and they score the goal. But really promising for this team is we fight back. It's through a set piece, and we seem to do a lot of comebacks through set pieces, but we do it again. Nico Lodero takes a long shot. It gets saved. He goes over and takes the corner, and Brekalo gives us his first, preview of his goal scoring capabilities with a nice header here to make us 2-2.
Yeah, this is a point that I raised when we signed Brekalo, is he averages about five goal contributions a season in every single professional stop he's had so far. The man just is a set piece savant, and he's looked like it several points thus far this season. He's gotten his head on balls in dangerous positions. He's even getting up there in the run of play sometimes, just like, hey, throw me or hit me one. You know.
Oh yeah, the free kick against Tigres. Yeah, that's right.
He's really, really, really good on set pieces, and I would be shocked if this was the only one he scored this season. I think I think the over under should be set at 3.5 for him this season. I think he has a real chance at scoring 4 goals, just because that's literally what he's done. He gets like 3 goals, 2 assists, 4 goals and assists, like every single season that he's ever had as a professional. He's just got that knack for it. It's one of his best attributes. So certainly a reason that that Muzy and Co. brought him in, and he's doing what he gets paid to do.
Yeah, couldn't say it better myself. Hopefully this kind of kickstarts him. Like you said earlier, he hasn't really hit form. I've been impressed at times and disappointed at other times with him. He's been very meh for me. Hopefully this kind of kicks him right into gear, gets him going defensively, and we can start to see another really good partnership form like we had with Carlos and Janssen when they were at their peak. For the last goal, the one that finally vindicated my confidence in our team in this game, it's really just, you know, a standard defensive play, but this is what we've been needing all season, is just winning the ball and going. And I feel like a lot of times this season we've won the ball and we've kind of just kept it, and we've been very secure on the ball and trying to control the game through possession. In this instance, the 90th minute, Lodero gets the ball. Duncan's making a run, as he always does. And from there, he's through, he's onside, and he's automatic. He was never missing that. he's grown as a player, and you know, I think against Charlotte, he had a 1v1 like this in the Open Cup last year, I think, and he missed it. And that's never happening again for this player, it feels like. So automatic from Duncan McGuire, one of the best finishers we've ever had on this team. What did you make of the goal? Because I think this was a telltale sign that this is a little bit of a change in principles.
Yeah, I mean, props to Duncan for knowing the rules that, you know. So he noticed that on the quick turnover, the defensive line was past the midfield line. And, you know, you can't
be offside.
They were so high. And you can't be offside if you're on your own side of midfield. So he just sat there, looked at Ladero. Ladero found him, makes the run. Great first touch. Can in his stride, but not too heavy as to make it a danger to get intercepted by the goalkeeper. Sends the goalkeeper the wrong way, slots it home in the corner. Just very, very clinical finish. Certainly not comparing him as an entire player to Harry Kane, but the finish reminded me with the just how casual it was, reminded me a little of Harry Kane. Just like, yeah, I'm one-on-one with the goalkeeper. Of course I'm going to score. What else would I do? You know, like almost that arrogance about it. Like there was never a question once he got that one-on-one. Harry Kane clears him in every single aspect of striker play, including finishing, but just the attitude towards it was what I noticed. I feel like that needs to be said, and so we don't go on Twitter. Adam said Duncan McGuire's Harry Kane.
Down well.
Right? What I also think is that Nico Ladero has an important role to play, and I continue to be convinced that it's as a deep line playmaker. Because he's constantly, when he's in a true midfield role and not trying to be a dynamic 10 and not trying to be on the end of runs and not trying to play give and goes and not trying to press all over the front line and all that, when he's not trying to cosplay as, you know, prime Lucas Ceralan or Diego Rossi or whoever is on the crew.
Or prime Nico Ladero.
Whenever he's not trying to do that cosplay, and he accepts like, hey, I'm still the smartest player on the pitch, probably. I've got more MLS minutes than like half their squad combined. I've got absolutely wicked ball striking ability and an ability and touch and an ability to pick out a pass. When he just and he's still got a ridiculous motor on him. When he just focuses on using those skills to be a good midfielder, he's still an above average player in MLS, in my opinion. And he showed it again with a perfectly weighted ball in stride to McGuire, seeing and recognizing that he was past the defense but not offside. And it resulted in a goal that gave us 3 points. And so please, Oscar Pereja, because you're definitely listening to this, as we always say, play Nico Ladero at midfield, maybe even a little more than you're doing it. But make sure he stays in the midfield. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yeah, I agree. That's where he's looked best this season. And he's the one who looks up. He gets the pass. He's the one being more direct. I hope that was Oscar's instructions and not just a relic of the past. You know, just him going through the motions and remembering Schmetzer's words ringing in his ear saying look up, go long in the last few minutes of the game, especially if someone's making a run. But he's looked good from there. And I mean, Duncan McGuire, for me, he's got to be starting over Muriel. I mean, Muriel, you and I were talking about this pre-pod, but like up top, Muriel wasn't doing much, and the moment he had a chance to do something, he was really not convincing in it. And just look at the difference. I mean, you talked about Duncan McGuire being so lethal and being so almost cocky and arrogant in front of goal. And Muriel just looks like a player low on confidence, tamely hits the ball when he's one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and takes forever to make a decision. I mean, that's just a sign of low confidence in a player. And for me, Duncan's got to be starting up front for now. I know we're losing him. I know we're going to lose him for money. And we're going to need to lean on Luis Muriel for the rest of the season. And we got to figure it out. But we also got to win games. And like right now, I'm really leaning heavy on get Duncan as many minutes as possible because he's scoring every time he touches the field.
I get that, and it's hard to disagree with it. I'm going to try, though. I think, A, Duncan McGuire in his super... What are Duncan's best attributes, right? He's a finisher. He is good on set-piece defense. He is a plus athlete, and he has a seemingly tireless engine for 60 minutes, after which he gets gassed because he doesn't stop running. That, to me, the reason Duncan McGuire looks so good is because he's coming in the 65th, 70th minute, running against tired legs constantly, and when he does get that chance that he inevitably is in position for because he never stops running against those tired legs, he hits it because he's a good finisher, and then he helps in cleanup duty, you know, heading balls away in the box. That is a role that fits his skill set to a T. And last year when he started fading down the stretch, it was when he was starting at striker, playing against more rested legs, against better set defenses, you know, particularly defenses that hadn't been rattled by five substitutions yet. And he wasn't getting quite the service because there was still a game plan in place that may not have included just hit it direct to Duncan and see what he can do. Also, you know, as you stated, we are going to sell Duncan in the summer, almost certainly. I know it's not official yet, and it won't be until the summer, but I cannot imagine a scenario in which he stays unless it's literally he's just scoring so much and they're like, hey, stay till the winter. We'll guarantee you the starting spot. Let's try and win a trophy. I don't see that happening, even if he is scoring a bunch. It just doesn't seem like something Parejo would do. So you got to figure out what you're going to do when he's not here. And that means figure out what to do with Luis Muriel, because you're using a DP spot on him. You can't get rid of him literally one window later, which if you're not starting him, you almost would have to try to do. He's low on confidence, but you can clearly see his ability. It's not like he looks horrible every time he's on the field. He just hasn't scored yet. I think you have to, and same with Faco at the 10. Muriel at striker should theoretically work with Faco at the 10, because Faku's going to be trying to be a much more direct player. Muriel can be a much more creative player. Kind of swap their roles a little bit. Have Faku pass Muriel and play the give and go a lot. I think it should theoretically work, but it needs minutes to work. And I think that style is more likely to work against these set defenses earlier in the game when you have teams playing a mid or a low block, as about half of them do in this league. I think that Pareja owes it to his squad to try and figure out a way to win with tactics and strategy rather than a set piece goal, one run of play goal, and then a, you know, an opportunistic transition goal.
Yeah, nothing to do with tactics. That's fair.
So I think that you kind of owe it to yourself, if you're Orlando City, to make Muriel work.
Yep. And it is being proactive. You're right. And I understand that. It's just not working. And as we're sitting here, not yet, right? As we're sitting here talking, I mean, I'm starting to think a little bit like, and this is a discussion for a different day probably, but what is our hit rate with DPs under this regime?
We'll call Carr a miss.
Yep. A complete miss. Yeah.
I don't think anyone else is, and Muriel's way too early to tell. I'll call Nani, Marisa Pereira, and Faku hits as far as Nani turn around the team, and then Marisa and Faku won us a trophy. And then yep. Ojeda to me just hasn't gotten the opportunity.
Yeah, but to me, that leans more towards like a half of a miss, almost, just because like you get in a DP when you're using one of those slots, you should have total alignment between coach and front office. And there's got to be some sort of misalignment there if, you know, you had a plan to bring in this guy, he's a good player, and all of a sudden he's riding the bench for his first season and he's in and out of the lineup constantly.
I mean, so I do see that. I have a couple theories. One on Ojeda specifically is that there was an offer that came in for Facu, and they got Ojeda in, and then Facu ended up staying. I think Ojeda was supposed to be a Facu replacement, completely honestly, because not that they're the same player, but they're left-footed, you know, direct-ish play wingers, both of them, that are more focused on end product than creativity.
Who did we get an offer from for Facu?
This is just a theory.
Oh, okay.
But,
okay.
I think last summer when we, or last winter when we brought Ojeda in, I think an offer came in for Facu and he was probably thinking about going and then he decided not to go.
Gotcha.
That's my theory. Or at least, you know, there were plans to sell Facu earlier than I think the rumors came up, and then he signed a new contract and now both of them are here and have been for a minute. I don't think it was ever planned to have Facu and Ojeda on the same team for this long.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
My other, less of a theory, more just kind of connecting the dots of Muriel. Muriel is a Colombian legend, as is Oscar Pareja, honestly. He is so, so, so respected in the Colombian football scene. I can't imagine that the front office and Pareja were not on the same page in terms of bringing in Muriel. Muriel even said when he came in that Oscar Pareja was a reason that he wanted to come to Orlando City. So I can't imagine they weren't on the same page there. I don't know. They're a little bit of a disconnect. Maybe not in the DPs, but in the way the rest of the roster is built. I think that Rico especially has an idea of what kind of players that he thinks are good and that usually are good. And we see that because we see that we end up with really talented rosters that don't always put it together, especially offensively, how we think they should.
Sorry, say the last part again. What'd you say?
All right, I have a cat running amok also. So I think that I kind of agree with the disconnect on, say, the rest of the roster, not necessarily the DPs, that we end up with a bunch of really talented players. Take, like, say, Cesar Araujo is a perfect example to me. Really talented player, thrived in his role as mainly a six last year. This year he's been being asked to play being asked to play basically like a junior or so eight, getting up into the box, joining the attack. And that's not his game. And we didn't really replace the role vacated by Mauricio Pereira and Junior Urso last year when they were both playing kind of an 8-10 combo, Urso the year before more. We don't have that midfielder on the roster, especially because Ladero's not playing it well. Then they're trying to shoehorn Cesar into that role. And even though you have a talented player, you don't have the piece that Pareja wants to use for his system. And that, I think, is where the disconnect is. Not necessarily that we're not hitting on DPs, but that the entire roster build and the tactic and coaching philosophy are not necessarily 100% locked tight with each other.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. We'll have to keep an eye on that. So I'm still leaning towards like some of these DPs. You called out Cara. I mean, Facu's been a hit, but he's also had his struggles. He hasn't been like a 100% locked in success, but I still think he's been a key contributor for us.
I think the problem with success DPs is we don't have an MVP candidate. And usually the elite teams do. You know, we don't have a guy who's hit on the level of Hany Mukhtar, Zelrayan, or Pozuelo, or Carlos Vela, or Driussi, Cucho, whoever. You know, like, Crew hit on one of those guys, like, every 2 or 3 years. And we just haven't gotten a single one.
Yeah. And, but I mean, we've swung big. We went after Luis Diaz. We went after Julian Alvarez, and we didn't get either of those guys. We went after Germán Cano. So we're kind of getting our backup DP options, but still frustrating.
But then, you know, Faku, I'm not saying Faku is a failure by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
Faku was supposed to be that guy. We spent like $10 million on Faku. He was supposed to be the MVP candidate.
Yep. 100% agreed. He's just not up to that level.
And
hopefully we can unlock that.
He did win us a trophy. He scored the game winner in that game.
Yes. Yes, he did. Yep. So, all right, let's close out. Anything else did you want to add on the DC United game? I mean, some good saves at the death from Galese. He made a couple of them.
Yeah, we got to give Pedro his props. I think one of Pedro's better games this season. I think he's trending in the right direction. He had the absolute howler at the beginning, but he saved us twice in stoppage time. And so, I'm willing to forgive him for that. As long as, he keeps saving games, keep winning games because of him, and he's not losing us games, he's good in my book. It feels like that's a microcosm of the whole team, in my opinion, for this game, is trending in the right direction, still not quite there yet.
Yeah. Yep. Hopefully those saves will get his season started. maybe you just need to make a couple key contributions as a goalkeeper to really get your confidence and really kick off the season for yourself. So hopefully that's what's going on there. All right, we only got one question tonight for us to cover. It's from at Cuttlefish Army. Yeah, what's going on? But at Cuttlefish Army says, what's the single most important transfer move this team needs to make in the summer window? For me, it's selling Facundo Torres and signing a young DP number 10, akin to Atlanta United signing Thiago Almada. That'd be a big change midseason.
I would like to clarify two MLS rules on why that's not going to happen. So we're all kind of taking it for granted that Duncan's going to be the big sale this offseason. MLS just changed the roster rules that you can get up to 3 million GAM from a single transaction, but that is also the limit you can receive in a single season. So it doesn't make sense to make more than one big sale in a season, because then you're just going to lose out on 3 million GAM, which is huge. It is gigantic. That's like an all-star level player would be traded for 3 million GAM. So losing out on that GAM selling Facundo makes absolutely no sense. Also, the YDP rule basically doesn't exist anymore because of how it's been decoupled from the U22 initiative. Basically, in that the age doesn't matter anymore. You can have 3 DPs and 3 U22s and have all the DPs be full DPs. Or you can have a salary restricted, or you can have 2 DPs and 4 U22s. Where that fourth U22 could basically be your YDP, whatever, but that would be a salary restricted slot. But you can now have 3 full DPs and still have 3 U22s. So the YDP basically doesn't exist anymore, practically. I'm sure the rule is still on the books, or maybe it's not, but we don't need a guy to be a YDP. That was strictly a this offseason thing that is no longer a thing.
Right.
So I just want to get that out of the way.
But what for you then, I think that's all accurate. What for you is the single most important transfer move this team needs to make this summer?
If I got my wish, then see, I would love a 10, but we're not selling a DP, so we won't have the slot open to do that. And I don't think it's that hugely important that, you know, we should try and move a DP and basically waste that money just to get a 10 in. And so my realistic wish is midfield. I would like a starting midfielder. I would like someone to push Arun and especially Cartagena for their spots. And B, just we need another person in that rotation that can play minutes that is better than Felipe. Felipe is great at coming in and doing a job for the last 10 minutes of game. I don't want him playing much more than that. He doesn't have the legs at this point. That's just it. He's a useful squad player, but I think we need someone to A, take Felipe's job, B, possibly take Cartagena's job. So when we sell Duncan and get that 3 million GAM, that's at the top of my wish list. I'm going to cheat and I'm going to get a second one. We are going to have two U22 slots opened up by this new rule of decoupling the DP slots from the U22s. So I'd like to see a U22 attacker of some sort. I kind of don't even care which position. Just get someone else in there. Someone fast that can score. I would like that. Just to, you know, kind of throw them out and see what happens, because that's almost never a bad idea.
Well, yeah, we're losing a lot of goals with Duncan Maguire leaving, so we're going to need to replace that. I mostly agree with you. I lean more towards the attacker, but I think they both need to happen. I would say both, honestly.
We will have both the cap space and the real money to do both.
Right, and the roster spots themselves.
Like yes,
the 30. We'll have we'll have those available as well. So if we don't do it, something bad happened in negotiations at the last second, and two or three deals were not able to happen, essentially. And we got screwed over, kind of like we did in the winter transfer window, as we all saw publicly unfold. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting summer for sure. I'm glad that we have that flexibility, and I hope we take full advantage of it, because I think that could really give us a good momentum boost as we head into Leagues Cup and as we head into the end of the season. Get some fresh blood in, help with the rotation, and hopefully get some momentum going. We have seen some people come in mid-season and just, you know, really turn things around. I remember when Chicho Arango came in for LAFC, and I think he scored nearly every game. And I don't think they quite made the playoffs that season, but he almost dragged them to the playoffs, if I recall correctly. Yeah, I don't know. I would like to see something like that happen, where we bring someone in and he just lights the league on fire, just
so
right off the start.
Mid-season, such luminaries as Yoshi Otun and Mauricio Pereira, and both of them had shit like first half seasons with us.
Yep. And yep. Then Otun awesome. Was part of the worst season in our history.
And, yep. And then they become like suddenly awesome in their first, like once they get an off season. Why can't anyone just come in? You know, like someone gets a high price free agent or whatever signing, and like, and he scores in his first game. Didn't it, like Cucho almost have a fucking hat trick in his first game?
I think so, yeah.
Like, yeah. Why doesn't that ever happen for us? Pizuelo hit an absolute banger in his first game. Like,
just not there.
Why can't we have nice things?
Yeah. So, well, that would be nice. And I'm sure our front office is currently, they probably already have their plan in place at this point. And they're just
should all be fired.
Yeah. They're probably getting ready to execute on it, really. So, okay, well, that's all I've got. Quick episode. Anything else you want to add, Adam?
No, I think that's it. Not too much. You want to do a little Montreal preview?
I guess, yeah. I mean, Montreal have been decent this season. They've had their ups and downs. They are 3 wins, 1 draw, 3 losses. Their one draw comes against us from opening day season. Key results being they're coming off of a win at home against Cincinnati, but right before that was a 5-0 loss against Seattle, who have been dreadful this season. And other than that, they've just been up and down, up and down. They beat Miami in Fort Lauderdale, but then lost to DC United on the road, lost to Chicago, giving them their first win of the season. So in terms of results, they've been up and down. And play style, I mean, we've already seen it, right? They like to sit deep. They like to compact the middle, try to hit on the counter. And, you know, they against us, they just weren't very clinical. I'm expecting more of the same, but this time they're at home.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be an annoying game.
Yeah.
And one we should win. Like, we were, you know, we saw it the first time. Looked over the roster. They don't have one, the guy on the roster. We're like saying, like, Bryce Duke is probably their most talented player, at least, like, creatively, offensively. But they don't have anyone that really scares you. But they're playing well as a unit. They seem to be on the same page as their coach. And they're going to play that style that's just tough to beat. We'll see if we can break it down. And if they are more clinical, they could probably steal a goal or two, kind of like DC did.
In this game, if we're going to win it, I think we're going to win it 1-0. But I could see a world where Montreal beat us like 2-0, like I think they did in the playoffs. Kind of like that game where it was just like close game, close game, close game. Oh, they've scored. And then they sneak another one somewhere in there. Something like that.
I could see that. I could also see that happening the opposite way. If we somehow score early, say Muriel gets his, you know, finally pulls off some trick and scores. And then we add another in transition and say 2-0 to 10 the first half. I could see it getting ugly the other way. Because if we force Montreal to then come out of their structure, I don't think they have the talent to do that effectively. So I think that's going to be a big litmus test for Orlando City. Is if they are who they say they are, in that they say that they're still, you know, a contender worthy of competing for trophies, is the line that they continue to tell us. I think they have to come out hot. I think they have to come out and score at least one goal in the first half, preferably two, preferably one goal in the first 25 minutes, and try and punch Montreal first. Get them off their game and take control of it like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good point.
We cannot let them dictate it.
I think the first goal is going to determine who wins this game almost. Like, if there's, like, I feel like it's that first goal is going to be really important to this result.
I agree. I think more than most.
Yeah. It just feels like one of those games. So.
They play a very heavy midfield. Yep. I think especially if they get the first goal and go up early and we don't punch them right back, I think they will be perfectly comfortable sitting on it, knocking the ball around, making us go wide and take away our midfield, which was the problem in the first game, is that our midfield got completely outnumbered. Because Ladero was at the 10. Arujo was playing super high. Cartagena had an awful game.
Yep.
Yeah, it was bad. We have to avoid that, have to win the midfield, and have to take control of it early. Otherwise, I see a lot of the progress we've made becoming undone this game.
Yep. I'm going to predict a Poppy special. I'm going to predict a 1-0 win.
I'm going to be hopeful and say 2-0. I almost think 2-0 is more likely than 1-0. Because if they play well, they should win it 2-0 or more.
Us?
Us. If Orlando City plays well, Orlando City should win by 2. I think if it's an even game and we steal it on a 1-0 Poppy special, that is still cause for concern, because just by talent. They don't have anyone as, forget Faku or Ojeda or whatever. They don't have anyone as talented as Cesar Rojo on their roster. They don't have anyone as talented as Dagrinan Thorolsson on their roster. Right? These are like our second rate guys. They don't have anyone as talented as Ivan Angulo on their roster. They're just a bunch of guys. We should be beating this team.
I agree. So hopefully we do. All right. Let's leave it there. Where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at my Instagram is not Kosher Taco Truck. I just realized this. I changed it a while back, actually. It's at Chef Adam Milsom. If you ever care to see the things that I cooked like 3 years ago and haven't posted like since then. But you can find me on Twitter at Kosher Taco Truck to find my ramblings about not much lately, but occasionally in Orlando City, or complaining about the Cowboys, or at Cappy's Food Truck on Twitter and Instagram, where you can find where I will be doing that those things. We got May the 4th. I don't know which opponent it is, but it's going to be Star Wars Day. We'll be at Broken Strings Brewery for an Orlando City game. They're back open. Go and support them before any City or Pride match. They would very much appreciate it. They have fantastic beer. We'll be there on May 4th with a Star Wars special that I still have to come up with.
That's May 4th is the FC Cincinnati match.
That'll be a good one. Be a good one. So yeah, come see us then. I'll have some fun specialty thing. And yeah, it should be a good time.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks, Adam, as always, for joining me tonight. And thank you to the listeners for listening. We really appreciate it. And yeah, as we always say, they can find me at Lions Blog One. That's about it. Yeah. Yeah. And as always, vamos, Orlando.
Vamos.
To put in all the work, everybody, for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit, and we move towards our goals together as one.
Martins, it's fed Angulo to cross into the box, that's one missed it!